beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week of September 24th, 2004, this is the Rain Report, available on demand from rainreport.com and via terrestrial dial-up at 847-827-RAIN. That's 847-827-7246. I am Roger Cusson, KA1-USA. Part 1 of our Rain rerun with the Helicrafters Collector is still online from rainreport.com, thanks to audio bandwidth being underwritten by CQ Communications. If you are a collector of radios from decades gone by, you already know the difficulty of replacing original parts. Chuck Dauchess, WD5EOG, has been collecting and restoring Helicrafters products since 1971.
The part that I hear most about from people requesting help is a mechanical part rather than an electrical part, and that would be the band switch drive belt for the FPM 300 transceiver, and there's a lot of those still in use. It's a fibrous belt that turns, I believe, three separate band switches that are timed with this belt. And if the belt snaps, of course, you can't change bands. The belts do deteriorate. They're a fibrous rubber material, and there have been a few places where belts made for other purposes would work, but I have not yet really found a source specifically for those belts. That's the number one part, I would say, that gives people the most trouble at this point. You know, other parts do fail, certainly, but I don't know of any that are particularly troublesome to find or to substitute. If you want original parts, of course, from a historical point of view, that's what I need to have. There is no commercial source for any new old stock Helicrafters parts, so the only way to get an original part is to actually find a parts radio that has a good part on it that you can use.
From my limited experience with old equipment, capacitors tend to be some of the parts that deteriorate the most.
That is absolutely correct. The paper and wax bypass capacitors invariably will need to be replaced in wholesale quantities in order to get the equipment back up to its original specifications. But those parts are not difficult to get a hold of. I use state-of-the-art parts to replace capacitors.
For the beginner collector, is there a blue book or some sort of guide to know what a fair market price is for a given Helicrafter radio?
Price guides are really troublesome item, I think, because it is so subjective to judgment. Differences in definition of words like good, mint, excellent, poor, geographical location, the particular buyer and seller, all of these things have an effect on the cost of a particular piece of equipment. There is really no blue book available with prices specifically of Helicrafters equipment.
How many Helicrafter radios do you have in your personal collection, and which ones do you prize the most and why?
Well, in the collection proper, which does not include my duplicate units or any parts units, there are about 450 pieces, including the duplicate and parts units, probably pushing 700 radios. The ones that I generally prize the most are the prototype units, the one-of-a-kinds, the very rare units. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best unit the company produced, but there are several in my collection that I'm really pleased that I was able to acquire, and they include the dual diversity receiver, model number DD1, my S1 and my S3, my S30 radio compass, the SX-112, SX-26F, HT-1, and my HT-36, and also a Helicrafters neon sign that I have. The collection also consists of more than just the hardware. I have a lot of advertising material and a lot of dealer memorabilia and things like that, and it's all important to me. I love every one of them.
What was that diversity receiver, the diversity?
The DD1. It's a dual diversity receiver. Probably the most exotic receiver that the company ever produced.
What is diversity reception?
Diversity reception basically is where you'll have two different receivers set up. You can do it with distance of the antennas, or you can do it with polarization of the antennas, say horizontal or vertical. The idea behind it, without getting real technical, is that the shortwave signal never fades at exactly the same time in two different locations or in two different polarizations. So if you had two antennas set up a half a mile apart, theoretically you would eliminate the fading effects on the shortwave bands.
Whatever happened to that receiver?
It came out on the market, was very expensive, and the idea of diversity reception itself never really took off too well in the ham radio product line.
With the experience you've gained over the years as a historian, collector, and restorer of Hallicrafter gear, I understand that you are coming out with a book that would be very beneficial to someone who's just getting started or wants to get started in collecting Hallicrafter gear. Can you tell me a little about that?
The book is going to be available middle of March 1996. It is probably the definitive book on the Hallicrafter's products, with over 600 photographs, over 200 pages, and 10 years in the making. It would be an invaluable tool for anybody interested in the products, collector or not. The title is Radios by Hallicrafters, and incidentally, there is a price guide in there on Hallicrafter radios.
As a postscript, do you have any advice to someone who would like to start collecting Hallicrafter or other vintage amateur radio gear?
As far as being able to acquire the equipment goes, my experience is that my advertising in the trade magazines is how I obtain about 90% of what I get, as opposed to swap meets.
Ads mean want ads?
Want ads, yes.
Where would someone look to find ads that would advertise collectibles?
The best places that I have found, and actually the beginning collector these days has it in some ways a little bit easier than older collectors, because there are now congregation places for people who are collectors, and those usually occur in the classified advertising of electric radio, antique radio classified. There are also other publications which have similar sections. Wanted ads, where they ask for stuff they're looking for, and other people are selling stuff that they want to dispose of.
That was the Hallicrafter's collector, Chuck Dotches, WD5EOG, excerpted from a 1996 interview conducted by Hap Holly, KC9RP. Chuck's book is now in its second edition. Chuck had collected over 400 Hallicrafter's radios as of 1996. So, how many does he have today? And does Chuck use eBay as a tool for adding to his collection? We don't know either answer, as he would not return our phone calls. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to RainReport.com, the only authorized internet source for Rain audio.
We conclude this week's Rain Report with some levity passed along to us from Art Householder, K9TRG. Some of you will remember Art as being one of the owners of Spectronics, the Chicago ham radio store that was such a popular spot to shop for ham gear back when Hap Holly moved from Escondido, California to Des Plaines, Illinois in 1974. Here is Blair Alper, KA9SEQ, to read Art's piece called My Antenna is Better Than Yours.
And now this humorous item passed along to us by Art Householder, K9TRG. Art writes, "This was written and published many years ago, and I just found it again. For those that don't remember it, have fun with it. I've won many beers telling this story and being challenged and then proving I'm right. My mobile antenna is 20 dB better than yours. This true story happened approximately 33 years ago. I will try to relate it as accurately as my old memory will allow. The facts are just as true and interesting today as they were then. We were hosting the FM Hospitality Room at the SAROC Hamfest in Las Vegas, as we had for several years, and the conversation got around to mobile antennas for the 2-meter band. Everyone had their idea as to which gain antenna was the best. As an aside, there really weren't very many to choose from back then. Someone asked me what kind I was running, and I replied, just a 5/8 gain antenna, but my antenna would outperform theirs by approximately 20 dB. Boy, did I get some funny looks. Then I commented that we could test their antenna against mine. We could use their vehicle or mine. We could use their radio or mine. The tests would be identical, but they would be under my conditions. This again raised some eyebrows and a few snickers. Remember, this was 30-plus years ago, and SAROC was the yearly meeting place for some of the best minds in the hobby. There were practically no store-bought radios then. We had to get old taxicab radios, police or fire department radios, and convert them down in frequency. Sometimes that even meant rewinding coils, changing capacitors across tuned circuits, etc. If you didn't have the smarts or didn't know someone that did, you didn't get on 2 meters FM, much less the 450 megahertz band. So someone immediately asked, okay, Art, what are the conditions? Let me digress for a moment here to explain how all this came about. There were two incidents, as I remember, that set me in the right path to this miracle. I was teaching a class in Rock Island, Illinois, every Saturday night, about 3 hours away after I closed the store, at normal driving speeds, but as some of you know, I'm not normal. I had cut the driving time down to just over 2 hours by pushing the speed limit in my new T-Bird. I also knew almost to the mile marker where I would lose the Chicago repeater. On one trip, I was just on the verge of losing the repeater when I saw an accident ahead. I pulled over and used the repeater to report the accident. Luckily, there were no injuries. The station that I was talking to commented that I had stopped in a good location as I was full quieting again. Found a hotspot, I thought. A minute or so later, we had to call it quits as I was in the noise again. Oh well, similar events happened in the next few weeks, and I was really puzzled as to why. On the next trip to Rock Island, I happened to look out the window and was watching my shadow when the light bulb in my mind lit up. I had to try something when I got back home to prove my theory. We had just received a bunch of orange Dayglo fiberglass low-band motorcycle antennas with loading coils. I unscrewed my 5/8 wave antenna specialist's whip from its loading coil and screwed in the orange Dayglo whip. We got out the Bird watt meter, cut the whip to the best SWR, and called it quits. The next Saturday afternoon, I was pleasantly surprised to find that my range had indeed increased to the repeater. In relating this data to the SAROC group, one individual said, hey, let's cut off Art's drinks. He thinks he can convince us that the orange Dayglo fiberglass antenna radiates better than a stainless steel whip. After the laughing died down, I related again that the clue was watching the shadow of the car and the antenna. Part of the thin stainless steel antenna whip was basically bent back 90 degrees. Huh, what happens when you cross-polarize antennas? Remember, the repeater antenna is vertically polarized. You get approximately a 20 dB loss. Ding ding, the bell is ringing. Now you take back what you were also thinking about this story. I mean article. Seriously, think about it. It's true. I don't know of any source of the orange Dayglo antennas anymore, and it's harder to find places that you can drive 90 miles per hour today without running into serious problems with the long arm of the law. However, if you really want to try this, it's fun, and you will blow a few minds if you don't tell anyone what you're doing. And there is a very simple solution. Try a couple of pieces of monofilament fishing line tied to the whip to hold it vertical. There is one more point to make. When we were all running tube-type armor-plated Motorola, GE, and RCA mobile radios, the SWR was not nearly as important as it is today. I think it was Pat Devlin from Tulsa that commented with some of the new rice boxes that had just started to come into the country. They might not be as tolerant as the tube types as far as high SWR was concerned, and with the stainless whips flopping around in the wind, the SWR would be all over the place and possibly burn out a lot of final transistors that were coming on board. Someone else commented that he had heard of shutdown circuits that kicked in when the SWR went out of sight. That could be true even today. If you are out west where the speed limits are not as strictly enforced and you get reports that you are cutting in and out, slow down and see if the condition changes. It very well could be the auto SWR detector is shutting down the power output to some degree to save the finals. That from Art Householder, K9TRG of Elk Grove Village, Illinois. If you have an item you feel is worth a Rain read, please email it to Rain's founder producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP. That's Hap, 1P, at rainreport.com. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.
That's it for this week's Rain Report, which is copyright 2004, Rain, all rights reserved. I am Roger Cusson, KA1 USA.